Whenever I go out to my parents' place in regional New South Wales, I make some excuse to pop outside after it gets dark. And then I tilt my head back and stare for as long as I can at the innumerable stars I can see out there. I'm always shocked by how bright the Milky Way is. I don't even live in a built-up area, but the contrast of what I see out there in that dark sky is amazing. Scientists estimate that 80% of the world's population lives under a light-polluted sky, and a third can't even see the Milky Way. A desire to see the kind of night sky I get to see at Mum and Dad's is driving a new kind of travel experience known as dark sky tourism. The concept has even been named one of this year's top travel trends by one of the big booking companies. So, what exactly is it? Some light amongst the darkness in just a moment from a dark sky tour guide. But I'm curious to know if this is something you've done. Have you travelled somewhere specifically to experience the night sky? What did you see? But I'm joined by Marnie Ogg, who is a dark sky tour guide and the founder of the Australasian Dark Sky Alliance. Marnie, welcome to Life Matters.
Hi, Tegan. Hi.
What's this trend all about?
Oh, well, it's for me, it's actually recovering some of our childhood experiences, a bit like you've just explained yourself, you know, going out to those areas away from city and looking up to the night sky for me was, you know, something that I did with my dad and drew a lot of curiosity about where we came from, why we're here, and just to, you know, even looking for satellites. There's so many questions that we can answer about our human civilization when we look up to the stars. And I think that it's drawing a universal experience because so many people cannot have that. Australia is very rich with our dark skies, but there are people travelling from all around the world to see something that they never could see in their own country. So it's definitely a growing trend.
How does Australia compare to the rest of the world in terms of our access to a dark enough sky to see that number of stars?
We are probably in prime position, I would say. We have some of the clearest, darkest, most accessible skies in the world. There might be places that are darker, but we still have access to them and, you know, able to get to them relatively quickly. For people in America, for example, they might have to drive 6 to 8 hours to get somewhere to see something relatively dark. You know, Sydney-siders, Melbourneers, etc., could probably just drive a couple of hours to see something pretty dark and really see a number of stars in the night sky. So we really have an opportunity to grab that and hold that and make sure that we don't lose that in expanding our dark sky tourism and our dark sky awareness in Australia, really.
What is it about this moment in time that's seeing it increase so much in popularity, do you think?
Well, we've got a combination of a couple of things. One is that tourism is experiencing, you know, an economic, well, an abundance, really. Everybody wants to go somewhere. So there's an opportunity for people to travel more, and it's not economically so challenging as it has been in the past. But the thing that's really just drawn everybody to look up at the night sky is the Aurora Borealis and the Aurora Australis, which, you know, these beautiful coloured night skies with the aurora dancing across the night sky just can't help but enchant everybody. And that actually works on an 11-year phenomenon, and we're actually at the peak now. So all these sightings that we're getting, even as far north as, you know, Tamworth in New South Wales, are rare and probably won't happen for another 11 years. So we've got a peak that are drawing people to look up at the night sky now with that. And then we've also got things like even Starlink, which, you know, is actually a form of pollution, of night light pollution in our skies in itself. But those trains of satellites that sparkle like, you know, pearls in the night sky as they get launched up 20 at a time are drawing people's attention to the night sky, and we're wondering what that is. So there's a few different things happening there. But I also think that the other thing that is that people don't actually get much access to nature. It can be difficult to get to, but even in an urban environment, you can look up to the night sky and experience something of a natural wilderness in our night environment.
It's very timely to be talking about this week because the Ada Aquarids meteor shower is happening this week. I don't know if you've managed to get out and see it, Marnie. What's the most amazing thing you've seen when you've looked up at night?
Oh, gosh, I've seen some wonderful things. I've seen lots of beautiful aurora in northern Scandinavia, where we've just come back from, and in Greenland. But I can't get past, Tegan, our Australian night skies and this experience that actually sort of haunts me when I think about it. I was driving out to Coonabarabran, Australia's astronomy capital of the world, and of Australia's astronomy capital, I should say. And I had an entourage of people driving in cars, and the car in front of me stopped, and then the car in front of that had stopped. And I realised that we were all just stopped and looking at this absolutely dazzling night sky that was just so emotionally beautiful. And we were all just awestruck. We sort of all got out of our cars and just stood there for 10 minutes. And so sometimes it's not one thing in particular, but the whole environment, you know, the clearness, the wind, that whole emotional, all your senses coming together, really.
It is a really emotional experience looking up on a really big, bright night. So, Marnie, you helped establish Australia's first dark sky park, Warrumbungle Dark Sky Park, and there are now several internationally recognised dark sky places in Australia. What does it mean to be a designated dark sky place?
I think first and foremost, it's really just showing that that community or those people that have put it together actually recognise the value of darkness. The process itself is just to actually create a boundary of where you want that area designated, and to make sure that everywhere within that in that area is actually well lit. Now, we're not talking about turning off every single light and never having light again. We're talking about making sure that you're using the right light for the right purpose at the right time. And half the time we use light without thinking about it. We just use it willy-nilly. We use it like we used to use water in the 70s and 80s, just putting it, spurting it up wherever it needs, you know, without thinking about where it really needs to go or why we're using it. So, and I guess, and then it's a matter of actually getting the community on board to keep that area dark and to keep the education process going. So these places, as you say, there are actually seven in Australia now, basically form examples of good lighting, but also opportunities for people to go out and look at that Milky Way, that big dark sky, to see what good lighting is and just to learn about some of the impacts of light pollution itself, because we know they're vast and wide. Everything from human health to nocturnal animal species and even migratory bird paths being changed because of light. So it's a big problem.
You're listening to Life Matters here on Radio National. I'm Tegan Taylor, and we're talking about dark sky tourism, where you travel to places where you can experience the night sky in all its glory. It's a major travel trend this year, and I'd love to know if it's something you've done, what you saw, and where you went. You can send me a text 0418 226 576. One person says, I drove around Oz and did mostly rough camping in deserted areas. Not only did we enjoy a great celestial show, it was accompanied by an orchestra of night noises from animals and insects. Priceless. And Rebe says, the little beach town of Sandy Point in South Gippsland has a dark sky policy. There are very few streetlights. It's also good for the nocturnal animals, which is something you mentioned just now, Amani. It's not just humans that benefit when we turn down the lights a little.
No, that's right. So if you think about it, you know, the world's been operating on a process of natural night darkness and natural daytime, you know, brightness for 3.8 billion years. And then in the series of 200 years, we've started putting artificial light into that dark environment. And so all the animals and, you know, nocturnal animals are invertebrates. Everything basically has worked out when it is beneficial for them to feed, to forage, to look for mates, to sing for friendship, etc. And all those activities we're realising more and more are being completely disrupted by us putting artificial light at night in. Now that we know it's artificial, but the birds, the insects, etc. don't. And whilst we can adapt our environment by putting curtains and, you know, things into our environment to keep it dark for us, animals can't. So, and birds, as I said before, migratory patterns we're seeing get changed, or even birds not learning to fly because then they don't have that cover of darkness. So it's quite wide and a difficult pattern to change.
as the world becomes more densely populated and brighter, I can see a sense of dark sky tourism becoming even more popular. It has been mentioned as a tourism trend to watch by people in the know. What kind of future do you see for dark sky tourism?
It's actually been labelled a last chance tourism experience because it's a bit like going up Mount Everest or whatever, that, you know, there's not very few people that can get to do it, and they want to do it before it gets disrupted completely. So I think Australia has an enormous opportunity to get groups out to see these night skies, to not only learn about the impacts to our naturalist species, but to also learn about our cultural connections to the night sky, because Indigenous Australians have a beautiful relationship to the night sky and learnt a lot about their natural environment through it. So there's all sorts of opportunities there. And the advantage for astronomy tourism or dark sky tourism is that you basically have to be there overnight. So it can take tourists out to regional areas that may not actually have an existing tourism opportunity. So there's that.
No, you're right. Marnie, I've got this beautiful text from Coraline on 0418 226 576. She says, in 2011, my terminally ill husband and I had the chance to go to Parachilna in the northern Flinders Ranges. Mm-hmm. We stood under the night sky, absolutely stunned at the density of the stars. We could barely pick out the constellations. As we embraced, I thought, I will never forget this. As long as I have my wits, I'll never forget those precious moments only months before he passed after 44 yeah. years together. Oh, my gosh, Marnie, I've got a frog in my throat reading that story. If someone's never been a dark sky tourist before, where's an accessible first port of call to have one of those magical experiences?
Well, as I said, we've got so many really in Australia. I mean, if you can get yourself anywhere outside a capital city by about a couple of hours, one of my favourites actually is in the northern Flinders Ranges in Narkaroola. It's a wilderness sanctuary and just, you know, blessed with beautiful dark skies, but also rugged red sand earth as well. Oh, gosh, as I said, there's so many. Up in Winton, where the Dark Sky Place is up there, there's beautiful dark skies. Basically, anywhere you can get away from, cloudy skies and a little bit of light pollution. You could check out the Australasian Dark Sky Alliance. There's a Dark Sky Place list on there that has access to it. Mm. But I just think do a bit of a Google search on places that are already operating dark sky tourism. There's lots and lots of them now, which is great.
Marnie, thank you so much for joining me.
Very much.
Marnie Ogg is from Dark Sky Traveller and is also the founder of the Australasian Dark Sky Alliance.
Stream any ABC radio station live and on the go. Discover new podcasts, music and audiobooks, all free on the ABC Listen app.